Subcommittee.
Senate Subcommittee.
Senate Subcommittee. Where am I? I was watching the House performing on the video, the monitor. Yeah, Steve, you want to get us started here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today, there are a number of items on your agenda. One of those is the Satish Akadia from the Budget and Management Division will be presenting the governor's recommended budget to you. But prior to that, I've distributed a few items here on tuition, and I'd like to speak briefly about tuition, which is an item that you may be getting to later today, but will more likely now be postponed to some later time. So I just wanted to talk about tuition and show what's going on with tuition and what various terms mean. If you look at this chart here on the front, this is tuition as far as a student sees it and how much they're being required to pay and what types of fees they're being asked to pay in order to attend the Oregon University system. What I've done is I've reconstructed a tuition bill for four different students, a resident undergrad, a non-resident undergrad, a resident graduate student, and a non-resident graduate student. And if you look down, for example, this first column of numbers, this is the tuition that a resident, that's to say an Oregon student at PSU who is full-time, would be paying during this school year. First of all, they would have a tuition charge of $2,694. And under that, you can see the range of tuition charges among the seven OUS system schools for Oregon undergraduate students. Those would range from $2,361 to $2,694. So actually, in the PSU case, this is actually the highest tuition of the seven institutions. In addition to the tuition, all students who are enrolling on a full-time basis have to pay a $180 technology fee, which supports programs such as computer labs, networking, basically those types of technology-related costs on the campus. And you can see the range there. PSU is in the middle of the range of what the seven institutions are charging. All students also pay a building fee of $75. That amount or maximum is in statute, and it applies to every student in the Oregon University system, every full-time student, whether they're an Oregonian or a non-Oregonian, a graduate or an undergraduate, is charged the $75 for a full year or the building fee. There are also incidental fees. Looking at the PSU student would pay $381 in incidental fees. The incidental fee finances student government and student organizations. Students would also pay a health service fee, which finances the student health services that are offered on campus, and that is $195. On some of the campuses, and I don't recall offhand whether PSU is one of these, on some of the campuses, if students could show that they have some other type of health insurance coverage, they can waive or have the student health the health service fee waived and otherwise not. On the other campuses, you have to pay the health service fee. It's a mandatory fee whether you've got another type of health insurance or not. But if you add all of these together, you see that for the undergraduate at PSU, they would pay a total of $3,525 in what are known as, some of these are known as mandatory fees. And for each of these, some students pay more in mandatory fees that aren't shown on this chart because they're in a particular program that charges fees for being a part of that program. And I'm not talking about lab fees that you would take primarily if you take a science course where you have some type of laboratory work, but for example, I believe all of the schools, if you're in engineering, if you're registered as an engineering major or an engineering graduate student, you have to pay an additional resource fee on top of the $35.25 to help support the additional costs associated with that program. And then if you have any lab fees, that would be on top of that. But this shows what a resident student would pay at PSU. At the other schools,
is this per quarter or per year?
Per year.
Per year.
Other schools, students would pay slightly more or slightly less. It just varies because all of these fees are not identical. The second column looks at what a non-resident undergraduate would pay. For purposes of illustration, I've used OSU here, and you can see that their tuition is much higher. It's at $12,144. And then if you look down at the technology fee, building fee, incidental fee, and health service fees, in every case, if you compare that to the PSU level, the difference is because it's a different school. It's not because they're a non-resident. Residents and non-residents pay the same technology fee, building fee, incidental fee, and health service fees. However, since they differ by school, and I picked two different schools here, that's why they're showing up as a different number. But if you are a non-resident undergraduate full-time at OSU, your tuition and fees would total $13,104. The final two columns show what the situation is for graduate students. And I just picked Western as resident graduate student and the University of Oregon as a non-resident graduate student. And you can see that the tuition for the resident graduate student is much higher than for the undergraduate resident student, though much lower than for the undergraduate non-resident. So it's about $5,000 in tuition at Western for a graduate student from Oregon. And again, when you add all these other fees, they're always the same. It doesn't matter whether the student's a graduate student or an undergraduate, a resident or a non-resident. These just happen to be the numbers that are in place for Western this year. And for that particular student, they would pay a total of $5,817. And finally, for University of Oregon as a non-resident student, just going down to the bottom line here, $11,900, you can see that they pay a lot more than resident students do, though generally they will be paying less than an undergraduate non-resident. So among Oregonians, it's more expensive to have the graduate tuition is higher than undergraduate. For non-residents, it's very often the case that the graduate is less than the undergraduate. Before we go on, I'm going to ask you to flip the page in just a minute. I want to talk about a couple of things. I want to talk about the tuition freeze that's been in place for 4 years and what the governor's budget is talking about doing with tuition. First of all, the tuition freeze only applies to that top row of numbers where it says tuition, and I'm still here on the front page actually. And if you look at the only person who's had a tuition freeze for the last 4 years would be the resident undergraduate. So it's that bold number there. For PSU, the number is 2694. For other students, it could be as low as 2361 at different schools. But that is the number that has been frozen or has not increased for 4 years. Mr. Padilla will be talking about the governor's recommendation, which includes a tuition increase for these students for the first time in 4 years. The original proposal was that these students have a 4% increase each of the 2 years on top of that $2,694 base. So if you did the math very quickly, and if you took 2694 and multiplied that by 4%, the increase would be about $108 the first year, and then the second year it would be a bit more on top of that, maybe another 110 or whatever. So in both years, you would have approximately $220 increase by the second year over the figure that you see here. If you look at the tuition for the other three categories here, the undergraduate non-residents, the graduates of both resident and non-resident status, for the past 2 years, their tuition has not been held constant, but has been almost always increasing at 5.25% each of the 2 years of the biennium that we're in now. PSU had an exception. They kept theirs down at a lower rate, but generally they've been increasing at 5.25% per year. Again, under the proposal that the governor has made, this rate of increase would, in the upcoming biennium, be 4% per year, the same rate as the rate for resident undergraduates. So for resident undergraduates, the rate increase, which had been frozen, would now go up to 4% per year. For everyone else, rate of increase, which had been 5.25% per year, would go down to 4% per year, though the governor has asked OUS to look into tuition policy and to see if they have an alternative structure of tuition increases that generate the same amount of money that is in his budget. So they are looking at that, and they will be able to get back to you with at least some preliminary suggestions of what they may want to do that may be different from the 4%.
Steve, in addition to that, can we have whoever it is that presents it tell us if it's possible, for instance, to eliminate or cut in half for 1 year or 2 years the building fees or the technology fees or the incidental fee or the health service fee, because I think most of us, you know, that are really and truly interested in keeping tuition down, why we look at like the first column there, and there's $900 in addition to what we consider tuition, the instruction and whatnot. And I want to know if there's any opportunities to have a moratorium for 1 year or two, or cut in half, or not have any of that. Yes, Senator, go.
Sure. I sort of doubt that some of those could be cut, but maybe they could. I just want to make a couple of points about our policy just over the years as we think about where we've been in tuition. I think when I started in the 70s, the students were paying about 25% of the costs of their instruction, the undergraduate students, and I think in the 80s it went up to about a third, and now I think they're up to a half, almost 51%, something like that. So over the years, especially after Measure 5 passed in 1990, there was tremendous increase in tuition, plus a lot of these fees went up, especially the technology fee, I think, was put in place. So the fees, tuition and fees, was a tremendous burden on students. Mm-hmm. So the effect of that, at least as I saw it, was that, you know, we cut away a lot of programs that students really wanted and needed, and some of them went away because of that, and then others simply were priced out of the market. So they shifted, some went to community colleges, some didn't come at all, and we had a decline in the number of students who were having the opportunity for higher education, at least the higher education they would have chosen if we hadn't priced them out of it. So those are just some of my comments. And as I look at it over time, since I've been around here for a while, as you have too, Mr. Chair.
Right. Well, I appreciate those comments. But, Cliff, I'm sure you know that my interest is the same as yours, sure, too, in terms of higher ed. Make it affordable and make it accessible. So we really have to look wherever we can at reducing the tuition.
The building fee, for instance, pays for debt service. And
I see that.
Facilities are in place, and you need to meet.
There's no choice there, although.
Right, yeah. Right. The technology fee, I think, is in it. The incidental fee are the fees the students put on themselves, mm-hmm, for the things they want to support. And the health service fee is a real bargain for them, and they need that.
Right, right. Okay, Steve.
Mr. Chair, members, if you flip over that page, this, instead of looking at the student's view of tuition, is looking at the system-wide view of tuition and seeing how much these fees generate in total. And these numbers are very nice. Unfortunately, they're probably not correct. I have to look at them a little further and make sure I can get them all right. But these, I think, are, at least for relative terms, these will be fairly, you know, quite close. The tuition that we were talking about raises $493 in what's known as the limited funds budget, which I want to talk about.
How about $493
million? I'm sorry, $493 million in the limited funds budget. And also about $30 million in non-limited funds. That would mainly be continuing education courses that people are not taking for credit. And that would be non-limited, and the legislature, as the term non-limited implies, does not say how much of those, does not place a limit on the amount of funds that can be spent out of that revenue source. The resource fees include the technology fee, which you looked at on the other side of the page, plus these additional resource fees for being in particular programs in particular schools. They generate another $22-23 million. The building fee, the incidental fee, and the health service fees, those amounts are shown, but those are all non-limited. That is to say, the state legislature does not say how much can be spent in these programs, and these do not go to support the basic education in general programs. They all have very specific uses that they're being used for. Going back down through the limited funds column, though, you can see there are some other sources of revenue, and when you total them all up and you get the figure $1.3 billion, that is the amount of money that the institutions, the seven institutions, and the centralized operations of the Chancellor's Office have to spend on basic education and general programs. So those would be the instructional, public service, research types of programs. The one thing I do want to talk about, the legislature's role in tuition. The legislature does not set tuition rates. That authority by law is vested in the State Board of Higher Education. So the State Board of Higher Education will set all tuition rates. But what the legislature does do is when you look at this page and you see that limited number, tuition, the legislature places a limitation on how much tuition revenues and other revenues the system can spend. So if the system is going to raise tuition rates, they need the legislature to approve that, because if you don't give them the limitation or the authority to spend those funds, there's no point in raising them. They would just be raising funds and they'd have to put them in they'd just have to sit there. They wouldn't be able to use them.
And so, Steve, that relates only to the tuition figure. It doesn't have anything to do with the resource fees and whatnot.
The resource fees, actually, you also set a limitation for that as well. Anything that's in the limited column,
okay,
you set a limitation for. And the system must have your approval before they can spend money from these revenues to a certain amount of money. So that is why when you hear tuition discussions coming forward to you for the rest of this hearing and in the work session, realize that your role is that you need to hear what the tuition proposals are so you know what the appropriate limitation is to establish, so that the funds can be spent that are expected to be raised, but that there isn't extra limitation that would allow tuition to go even higher without more approval.
Lottery funds, $5 million, how are those expended? Is that anything to do with lottery bonds?
No, that's actually the sports action lottery.
Oh, that's right.
Which helps support intercollegiate athletic programs and provides scholarships for graduate students.
Right.
I don't want to take up any more time.
Okay.
There's a lot of things to be said, but I just want to... I've contributed also a historical view of tuition and other mandatory fees. So this is the number at the bottom for resident undergraduates. This is the average for all seven institutions. So you see it's pretty close to the Portland State number at approximately 3,500. And it shows historically what's happened with tuition. And then I've added a printout from the Chronicle of Higher Education that shows how the College Board, which reports on tuition, basically to show how Oregon tuition compares with tuitions for other four-year public institutions. And for other four-year public institutions, just to summarize, nationally, Oregon's levels are pretty average compared to what's happening nationally, but we are higher than the tuitions in the West. In the West, there are traditionally lower tuition rates for four-year public schools than nationally. So Oregon stands out as having higher tuition rates than the West, but pretty average for the nation.
Okay.
I've done
it. Are you done? Okay.
Figures just in publicly owned education,
yes.
Not private. Yes.
Satish, please. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Chair Hartung and members of the subcommittee. This is Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services, here to present to you the Governor's recommended budget for the Department of Higher Education for the 2001-2003 biennium. And you should have a copy of my presentation document in front of you.
And if we don't, do you have extras?
Yes.
I've got it somewhere here, but I don't know where.
Oh, here I got one.
You got one? Okay. Okay, proceed.
If you turn to page 2 of the presentation document, the governor's budget consists of $3.6 billion total funds. This is a 24.9% increase from the 1999-2001 legislatively approved budget, and it's an 8% increase from the 2001-2003 current service level. The budget has $762.2 million general fund. This is a 1% increase over the 1999-01 legislatively approved budget, and it's a 3.5% decrease from the 2001-2003 current service level. The numbers I just mentioned to you are from the governor's recommended budget or the printed budget, which came out in December. If you turn to the next page, and you will see the various fund types that makes up this budget, and the department will be talking in detail about this later. Briefly, the 52% of the budget is funded with other funds, non-limited revenues. These are revenues that are from activities like student housing fees, food service, parking, gifts, grants, and about 27% of the budget is funded with limited other funds revenues. These are revenues from tuition, student resource fees, and special fees. About 0.1% of the budget is funded with lottery funds. These are the sports action lottery dollars for intercollegiate athletics. And the remaining 21% of the budget is funded with general fund. The general fund, it flows into the individual campuses through the resource allocation model. It also funds various targeted programs as well as the chancellor's office. And it also provides funding to the statewide public services programs. If you turn to the next page.
Yes. On that page 3, consolidated budget, the amount of scholarship money that flows to the institution or to the student, it doesn't show up in here, does it, in these figures, or does it?
In these, we have, Mr. Chair, we have a technical adjustment, and that will include the fee remissions, and that should cover the scholarship monies that will go in.
So like I understand, there's $68 million in Pell grants in the state, and that includes the independent schools too. But where does the public portion of that show up? Is just what you just told me?
Mr. Chair, I believe that shows up in under education in general after we do the technical adjustment. Does that answer your question?
No. Senator Troll?
I was going to say, we don't see any real federal funds listed here, and yet we know that there are a lot of federal funds in those kinds of scholarships. I wonder, doesn't the state NEED grant come in these funds, or is that, since we budget that someplace else in the scholarship commission or the student assistant commission, we don't budget that here, then, right? So it doesn't show up in this budget?
No, Mr. Chair, Senator Tool, the federal funds first. The department uses the federal funds as other funds.
Okay. So. So it shows up as other funds.
It shows up as other other funds.
And the state NEED grant then that comes to students, so do they show up here?
The state other funds? The NEED grants, it would come from other agencies, so that would show as other fund revenues.
Non-limited other funds.
Okay. Other funds, not, and that's a big portion of the consolidated budget, 52%.
Oh, but there's many things in there.
Yes, like what else is in there besides the...
One of the major things that are in there are the research grants and gifts that faculty are awarded, plus donations. Those are all non-limited as well. Plus some of those things that we were just looking at on that on the sheet here, so the building fee, the incidental fee.
Okay. Keith, continue.
Moving along, now we are on page 4. The governor's budget has 4 major general fund enhancements. The budget provides $20 million general fund to improve engineering education and to increase the number of engineering and computer science graduates in the state. There is currently a big demand for engineering graduates and computer science graduates. The state's high-tech companies have had to go to other states and even to other countries to fill vacancies. So it is hoped that this package will help these companies fill their positions in state. Secondly, the budget has $7.2 million general fund to expand higher education opportunities in Central Oregon. A branch campus will be opened in Central Oregon in the fiscal year 2001-2002. It will be fully phased in the 2002-2003 fiscal year, and it's expected to serve 400 to 700 students by the end of the 2003-2005 biennium. Thirdly, the budget provides $17 million general fund to address enrollment growth needs. You've heard from the previous presenters that the university system is experiencing record enrollment growth, and this $17 million is supposed to address that issue. Lastly, the budget has $8 million general fund to help the small schools. When the new resource allocation model or the budget model was adopted, there was a concern that the small schools would not be getting adequate revenues. So this $8 million is supposed to help these small schools by providing them with adequate resource base.
Expertise on the enhancements, the $7.2 million for Central Oregon campus, that's a one-time appropriation.
Mr. Chair, the university system will be needing operating funds to run the campus once it's there. So it may not be a one-time enhancement. It most probably will be part of the current service level budget and will need to be.
Okay, we'll leave that, members, because I don't think that's quite right, but maybe it is.
Mr. Chair, it seems to me that there would be a cost for these additional students to be educated, and as we educate more students there over time, that cost will grow. It costs so much per student, and that just will get more.
Okay, so whoever comes forward from higher ed, OUSY, let's address that. Okay, thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, on the Central Oregon, in this current biennium, there will be some starting costs that will not be needed in the next biennium, but Central Oregon is being phased in this time, so they would need some fees to operate the campus for the full 24 months. There would have to be some operations costs phased in. And I'm sure Harriet can address to that in the presentation.
Okay, thank you.
As you all already know, the governor came up with a revised budget a few days ago. The revised budget adds $45 million general fund to maintain the resource allocation model at its current levels. The individual campuses, they get their funding, the general fund funding is distributed to the individual campuses through the cells in the resource allocation model, and it is hoped that this $45 million general fund enhancement will maintain the cell funding at the current 87.9%. Secondly, the governor's revised budget also adds $7.5 million general fund for the statewide public services.
Okay. So, Representative Schrader.
Going back to the chair's question, then all these enhancements are. How does the governor view those? As far they're all ongoing? Are they any of those one time?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, these may not be one time.
Well, I'm asking you, if I may, you know, what's the governor's direction on that? Because in the past, like the $5 million for engineering was a one time allocation and came back and we did it again, and so I'm curious as to what the intent is.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, it would depend upon how the board decides on using these funds. The request was for a much higher amount. For example, engineering and computer sciences, the request was for a much higher amount. I think one factor is how much private funds the university system can generate.
Okay, we'll cover that also when we get into the Central Oregon. Okay, Satish, continue.
The governor's budget also has reductions this time, and these reductions were needed to balance the governor's budget. And while coming up with reductions, efforts were made to ensure that there would be least amount of impact on the core mission of the department, that is to provide affordable access to high-quality higher education for all qualified Oregonians. Now I will go through the individual reductions. The total reductions is $82.7 million general fund, with $25.2 million being replaced with other funds revenues. These other funds would be generated from tuition increase of 4% per year per biennium. The governor's budget cuts funding for collaborative programs. This eliminates supplemental funding that's provided to individual campuses to collaborate with each other and with community colleges. It also cuts funding that's currently provided to Oregon Health Sciences University employees to attend higher education institutions. This is a $2.8 million reduction. The budget cuts $20.3 million from statewide and campus-based services budget. Of this, $14.3 million is from the statewide public services budget. The budget...
Senator Trow.
I understand what statewide services are, but campus-based services, is that something different than statewide services?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, yes, they are different. Each campus has different public services that they do.
Can we have a list of what those are at some point?
Yes, certainly. Come to the table, Joe, please.
There are small business development centers, which is a combination of federal money and SBDC and local funds and general fund support. On two of the campuses, there are what are called regional services institutes, which provide, in a very limited way, some of the kinds of local research services that the land-grant university would provide statewide. The legislature created both of these entities, the SBDCs and the RSIs, in the middle 1980s. Those are the local services that are referenced.
So are those listed somewhere in all this material we have here?
We can provide the listing for you, Senator.
I think that would be appropriate because I'm like Senator campus-based services is kind of a new one for me. But
it was a grouping, a heading under which the SBDCs and the RSIs were gathered in the budget development process.
While you're there, explain the funding of the Central Oregon branch campus. The $7.2 million, is that a one-time allocation?
Senator, members of the committee, my understanding is that it's not.
Okay.
That is a permanent infusion of resources that would carry the center... the university branch for the first, Tom, help me,
the first two
biennia, and no other increase could be requested until then, 7.5 each for each biennia. And included in that are...
per year?
7.2 is for the first 2 years.
For the first 2 years.
Yeah, not the first two biennia.
For the first 2 years, but the assumption built into this is that the branch could not ask for additional funding until the third biennia, if I understand it. The 7.5 would continue, would roll up again in the second biennium, and then in the third biennium, based on growth, a request could be made. I'll have to check that to be certain.
It would roll up, so it would be more than...
Yes, sir. These are ongoing. This does not take into account how much fundraising is possible.
Mm-hmm.
That's an unknown at this point.
Okay.
There are faculty costs, service costs, rental of space from Central Oregon Community College, et cetera.
That's true. Is there an assumption that the enrollment then, the numbers, would stay within that, was it 400 to 700 range for the two biennia?
Senator Shirley Clark, who headed up that effort, could, when we come to that, provide you chapter and verse on how those numbers were arrived at. They are fairly conservative projections. It is the fastest growing part of Oregon. We presently serve between 400 students there. So those are fairly conservative numbers. But of course, they would have the tuition that's also generated.
Mm-hmm. Are we planning to accept anybody who applies or if they meet the qualifications?
Yes, Senator. I believe that's a decision Oregon State could probably better answer. Any Oregon resident, I don't think you'll see non-residents, and I don't think you'll see very many Oregon residents from outside the area for quite some time because there's no housing. And Central Oregon Bend has a less than 0.1% apartment vacancy rate, so it's not the kind of typical housing you would find in Corvallis or Eugene off campus.
Okay, Satish, continue.
Mr. Chair, the other reduction is $15.7 million general fund from centralized services and administrative expenses budget. In this, there are three components. There's a reduction of $5.3 million general fund. from the centralized services budget itself, and the budget expects the department to come up with reductions to duplication of by eliminating duplication of services by transferring positions from the chancellor's office to the campuses. And there's also a $5.4 million of reduction from services and supplies. And lastly, the $15.7 million total reduction consists of $5 million reduction of personal services.
That's true.
Senator Trow.
What's that number based on? I mean, you've got the three numbers in terms of, but has there been an assessment of whether or not you can do all of those reductions and keep the central services going and doing what it needs to be done? I mean, is that possible to do?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, let me give you a perspective on the reductions with regards to the total budget, so that may answer your question. On the Chancellor's Office budget, the $5.3 million is a 10% reduction of the total budget. And the $5.4 million is the reduction of the inflation factor for services and supplies. The total services and supplies general fund budget for the department is $121.1 million. So this is a $5.4 million reduction out of $21.1 million. And lastly, the department has $557 million general fund for personal services. It's a $5 million reduction of that. And reductions are always that tough. They are never easy. But
I know they're tough and I know they're never easy, but sometimes they're based on some kind of study as to whether or not you can afford to make them. Is it just a percentage reduction without the study?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, we did have discussions with the department.
Did they offer these up in the 10% cuts that they were asked to bring forward?
Mr. Chair, I can't remember if this was offered, but did this come up in the discussions?
Along with what Senator Trow just said, I'd be real curious to have a little better understanding of the governor's rationale on how he can reduce centralized services and administrative expenses by $15.7 million without having a truly, that's a fairly substantial number, and it seems like it might have a detrimental effect, unless the new funding model is bringing forth some of these hoped for savings. But I'd like to hear a little bit more about the rationale. And I
can you get into that in the next
okay. Thank you, Joe. Okay.
And there is other reduction is a $2.5 million general fund reduction. This is the extra funding that was provided to support non-resident master's students and the internship program. It's a $2.5 million extra funding that's provided for these two issues. There's a $10 million reduction of state support for research. This is a 59% reduction on the state support for research.
Question?
Yes.
Chair.
Representative Smith.
Yeah, on the reduction $10 million, and what's the total budget for that?
Mr. Chair.
$18
million? Representative Smith, on the research, I believe the total budget is around $18
million. $18 million. Now, is that for the extension offices from Oregon State regarding agriculture and forestry research? Is that what is affected in that reduction?
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, the extension services, they have their own different line item. It's a separate issue. So this would be just from the education in general.
Education
and general
research, like what?
This is the various academic research that the department undertakes.
Thank you.
That finances all the campuses.
Yes.
Representative Smith, members of the committee, the way most of this money is used is to provide the local match when we get a major grant. A faculty member gets a major NSF grant, the institution has to come up with a match to secure the grant. That $10 million is leveraged four and five times. So this is the reduction in the general fund support for that, but it will have, as we'll show you as we get further into this, it will have a dramatic effect on their ability to attract those grants.
I was just going to ask that question, follow up, Mr. Chair, if I might.
Yes, certainly.
So if we cut $10 million out of this research budget, that would snowball. So if we can't get the matching dollars for that, it's really not a $10 million. I would not look at it as if we're going to sacrifice grant monies. I mean, that's how I would tend to look at it, because we could be sacrificing $50 million by cutting out $10 million.
Representative Smith, I wouldn't disagree that that is the roll-up.
And that will be presented to us?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
Okay, continue.
There is a $2.8 million reduction from the state subsidy to veterinary and pharmacy programs.
Same as well.
Do we pick that up in the money that goes back into the RAN, bringing that to current service level, or is that something separate from the RAN, this money?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tour, that is something that the board and OSU would decide.
It's part of the RAN.
Okay. So the $45 million gets the RAN back to what it has been last time, right?
It's
current service level.
Current service level.
2.8 is beyond the 45.
It is beyond the 45?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So that's a real cut.
Okay, continue.
There is a $2.1 million reduction this which eliminates the reserve for system-wide needs, and this would, in the resource allocation model, there is some reserve that's needed to address issues like various adjustments and performance funding. So that has been reduced to $2.1 million. There's also a $1.3 million general fund reduction, which eliminates the carry forward funding for the Smart Jitney program. Lastly, the governor's budget has an additional $25.2 million general fund reduction, which the department is expected to offset with other fund revenues with a 4.25% tuition increase.
Yes, Representative Schrader.
Going back to that $15.7 million, you broke that out. Could you do that quickly again, numbers, and then roughly what those numbers represent, just real quick?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, the $15.7 million first consists of $5.3 million reduction is from centralized services. This is a 10% reduction of the centralized services budget. And the $5.4 million reduction is from services and supplies. The total services and supplies budget has $121.1 million general fund. It would come out of that. It basically, what it does is it gets rid of the inflation. The state agencies are given a little over 3% inflation factor, so that this gets rid of that. And lastly, the $5 million reduction is from personal services.
Thank you.
Yes, Senator Trill.
$5 million personal services, that means that's from positions?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trill, this could be from positions, it could be from vacancies, vacancy savings, and various personnel-related expenditures.
Are you expecting that people will be terminated as part of this part of the cut?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trull, the department is not part of the state personal information control system, so I can't answer that question. That's something that I think the department would be addressing.
Okay.
If you turn to slide 6. This shows the various program units and that make up the Department of Higher Education. As you can see, over 60% of the funding is for education in general. That's what we think of when we think about higher education. That's the academic side. And the others, Agricultural Experimental Station, which Representative Smith asked, that is, has 3.1% of the budget. Extension Services has around 2% of the budget. And Forest Research Lab has 1% of the budget. So moving along to the next page, you can see the various expenditure categories. 43% of the budget consists is for personal services. 21% is for services and supplies. 25% is for special payments. 8% is for capital outlay, and 1% is for debt service. There's additional 2% debt service, which is non-limited. I would now like to tell you how the governor's budget was developed. And if you want to refer to page 49 of the governor's recommended budget document, you may want to do that.
29 or 49?
It's 49.
49?
You should see a form like this, current service level form. The starting point was the 1999-2001 legislatively adopted budget. This consisted of $2.7 billion total funds. There were emergency board actions and increase in non-limited funds. This increased the legislatively adopted budget by $194.4 million. So with that, we come to the legislatively approved budget. This is $2.9 billion. And the various e-board actions are listed there. There was an $11.4 million increase in general fund. This is the employee compensation cost increase that was provided to all state agencies. And there was increase in funding for capital construction projects, $93.2 million.
Where are you, Satish? Page 49.
Page 49. You see a
yes.
Form like this?
No.
All of these details may not be there under emergency board actions. So.
No. Yeah, we don't have that.
Oh.
Anyway.
But this should be listed on the slide.
Okay.
That's there.
Did you give the numbers again, Satish?
Employee compensation cost increase is $11.4 million general fund and $1.1 million other funds. Funding for capital construction projects, $93.2 million other funds. And there was a special purpose appropriation for the Oregon Engineering Education Investment Fund, which is $5 million general fund. This would be spent as other funds, so it also has a $5 million other funds limitation. And there was funding for the Smart Jitney program. It's a $1.5 million general fund that was approved by the E-Board. And lastly, there was increase in non-limited expenditures of $77.3 million. So all of these add up to $194.4 million. So that's how we came up with the approved budget. Now, the approved budget considers emergency board actions only till April of year 2000. Then there were various base budget and current service level adjustments that were done. These totaled $456.1 million total funds. There were adjustments for positions and inflationary cost changes. There were adjustments for debt service, and there were various phase-ins and phase-outs. And there were removals of one-time costs. All these total $456.1 million. And Representative Fader, for the numbers, we can provide you with the CSL form that has it. Yeah. I would now like to talk to you about the policy packages. I will already talk to you about a number of these. Package 090 is the program reduction. It's an $81.5 million general fund reduction, the increase of $25.2 million other funds through tuition increase. There's a $1.3 million general fund reduction which you don't see under the policy package. It was taken out of package 020. That's the funding for the Smart Jitney program. The second policy package that we have here is package 101 that provides funding for the current service level exceptions that were not granted during the budget development process. There are two parts to this package. The package reallocates the Secretary of State audit charges by fund type. It also provides funding for the Oregon Wide Area Network, OWN. Funding for OWN was a special purpose appropriation, and the funds were released to the department after the April 2000 e-board, so it had to be a policy package and not be considered as a CSL budget.
Sure. What's the total on that, 1.6 or 3.8?
On this package, the total is would be 2.76 million total funds. This consists of 1.34 million general fund, 1.14 million other funds, and $275,000 is non-limited. The O1 funding is $1.6 million. Total funds, the remaining is for the Secretary of State charges adjustment among the fund types. And we will be going in detail each of these policy packages when the agency has its presentation. Secondly, package 104 is the $8 million I talked to you about earlier for small schools. This will provide adequate resource base for the small schools. Package 114, Tier 1 Engineering and Computer Science, What this does is it provides $10.7 million non-limited other funds for engineering and computer science. These other fund non-limited are supposed to come from private grants or donations. And this package is linked to package 163, Engineering Education Investment Fund package. The governor has added $20 million general fund for engineering education. Right now, this $20 million is in package 163. The governor has asked the board to decide on how it wants to allocate this $20 million between package 163 and package 114. Next, we have package 115 that provides $7.2 million general fund for Central Oregon. And we will come back to you with regards to the questions on costs for future biennium on both the engineering as well as Central Oregon. If you turn to page 11, there is package 119 provides $20.3 million other funds. These will come from certificates of participation and will be used for funding for campus proposed projects. These are for things like telecommunications, some infrastructure stuff, equipment. Package 120 provides $17 million general fund for enrollment growth, and we talked to you about this earlier. Later on, you will see a technical adjustment where we add $17 million other funds, as well as some positions for this package. Package 163, I already talked to you about, and package 180 provides $196.9 million total funds for new capital construction projects. You will be seeing a technical adjustment where there will be an addition of $61.6 million for new projects, and the agency became aware of some new projects after the budget was submitted, so we are just adding those. Lastly, you'll see two packages, package 444 and 445. These are interconnected. And this provides $12.1 million general fund. Ever since the 80s, the department has received general fund for general maintenance and renovations in education and general. For the last three biennia, this funding has been moved to the capital construction budget to provide the required state match for G-bonds. The G-bonds require state match, equal amount of state match. So that's what we are doing here. We are taking $12.1 million that was added to the capital to the education and general budget, the capital construction budget. Now, the capital construction projects will be discussed by the capital construction subcommittee later on.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Does that $12.1 general fund authorize substantially more money than that for these modernization projects in bond money? Are you authorizing bonds to pay for more than $12.1 million worth of maintenance and whatever you're doing with it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tua, this just deals with the G bonds, and there's a lot more F bonds. F bonds are paid with the other fund revenues, other revenues that the department generates. But this $12.1 million is a one-to-one match for G-bonds, and G-bonds is at the same level as for the current biennium.
And what are we buying with those then? We're not doing maintenance with those?
Usually these are for renovations and maintenance issues. The major capital construction projects you will see in the budget are funded with other funds and F-bonds.
Mr. Representative Schrader.
Question I guess I'd like addressed at some point when we get into the budget is, as we build all these new buildings, they ultimately need to be staffed. And the staffing usually means general fund money or RAM allocation model changes. So I wonder what sort of plan is afoot to make sure that we can afford to do that above what we're doing right now.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, if you look at the current service level budget for the department, you will see an amount where it's for maintenance of new buildings. That's something that has always been provided to the department. So there is some amount of general fund that would be needed for maintenance of these buildings.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
I was talking about people, teachers, professors, if you will, that need to occupy the buildings to make them functional, not just the maintenance and that sort of thing. So when the university comes up and discusses, I get some information on that.
We'll do that.
Most, Mr. Chair, most of this, I think, is not for new buildings per se that would take new people, but it's to modernize existing facilities to better use the people that are already there.
Great.
So turning to the next page, it talks about fees or revenue changes. As you already heard, the governor's budget proposes 4% annual general tuition increase during the biennium. The governor has asked the board if the board has any alternate proposals to come up with the $25.2 million revenue. Lastly, there's some more. On page 13, you will see the governor's March 2001 revised budget, and we already talked about this. It adds $52.5 million general fund. $45 million is to maintain the resource allocation model funding at the current level, and the $7.5 million is for statewide public services. The last few slides you will see, these are technical adjustments, and there are just a few that I would like to draw your attention to. Firstly, the governor's budget adds $99,821 general fund and $113,003 other funds for the geographic information system charges. We missed that when we came up with the governor's budget. So it's an addition of $99,821 general fund. Secondly, on the reductions that have taken place, when we developed the governor's budget, since we did not have access to the personal information system, all the reductions were taken out of out of services and supplies. So the agency has requested that these reductions be split among personal services and services and supplies. So we've done that. Thirdly, on the capital construction, there is an increase of close to $62 million of other fund expenditure limitation that the department is requesting. The department has identified some new projects it will undertake.
Satish, where are you?
I'm on page 14.
Yes.
And I'm, in fact, discovering 14, 15, 16, and 17 all together.
Oh.
So the reason being, a lot of these revenue changes. And the revenue changes, we, LFO and DAS, we have looked at the revenue change requests that the department made. Once the governor's budget came out, the department realized that there were a number of revenues that were not posted to the correct account. So they want to make sure that decision makers are provided with correct information. So this is just cleaning up, with a lot of it being having no effect. So under the revenues, what you will see is a lot of revenues being moved from one account to the other, and also there are removal of some revenues that were counted twice.
So on page 14, the middle column, adjustments, as I read down item number 4, interest income, a plus $8,748,000. What's that?
What that was that was left out when the governor's budget came out, or when the agency submitted the budget. We did not have that, the $8 million identified as interest income.
Interest income on what, something that higher ed held, some bonds or something?
It was in some other account. It was addressed in some other line item.
And so same as other revenue, $5,615,000, that was?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Other?
It was, this revenue was identified, but it was identified somewhere else.
Okay.
So it's almost a net, the net effect is almost zero. You will see some reductions because these are getting rid of revenues that were counted twice. So this is like cleaning up. And we spend a lot of time, both LFO and myself, with higher ed, and help them clean up all of these.
Are we changing our accounting system so there's less likelihood of that continuing to happen, the accounting part of it? They're counted twice or not at all?
Mr. Chair, yes, higher ed is working on that. In fact, they were the ones who identified and wanted these corrected, so they are working on posting the revenues to the correct account, and that is the right thing to do.
Certainly.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Trowe.
Maybe you already explained that, but why the big difference between the governor's recommended in sales and services and the $44 million reduction, the adjustment of $44 million? Why do you have to adjust that much money?
Where is this?
On page 14, looking at sales and services across the line. Why is there so much an adjustment there, 44 million?
That money is being moved to package 020. It was wrongly posted under the BS budget.
Mm-hmm. This is wrong posting?
Wrong posting, so now it's being posted to the correct account.
Okay. So it shows up someplace else?
It shows up in package 020.
020, okay.
I would think so, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. And one place I would like to draw your attention is on page 15 under section D. We need to do a correction. The last, it should read, reduce tuition and fees, not other revenues, by $1,002,061. And the last line of that section should read, further reduce other revenues by $138,539.
Give us a revised page.
Yes, I will provide you with a revised
page. Okay, good.
Now, if we turn to page 18, which is the last page in my presentation document, so you will see the governor's March 2001 revised budget together with all the technical adjustments that we have done. So the revised budget has $814.8 million general fund. It has $5.3 million lottery funds. $1,049,051,587 other funds. And $1,805,203,674 non-limited other funds, with a total of $3.67 billion total funds budget.
Okay.
Do you have any questions?
Questions?
Members? We'll have you back later.
Yeah, right. We have some questions for sure, but now is not the time. Okay, do you have anything else?
That's it, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, let's see. Joe, I have you on the agenda next.
And it's spring break. Okay. It's a day of absolutely, unashamedly, partisanship. Mr. Anderson and I would like to point out that our two alma maters are 50% of the Final Four.
You're kidding.
I'll take them away in a moment. I know
State
it's
offensive. Illinois, which really
but this is the flag of the state of Maryland, which is my alma mater, 1634, the first time we've made it to the Final Four.
Yeah, surely.
And this is the flag of the state of Arizona, where Tom and I worked together for a time, but he's actually an alum at Tucson. And so this is going to get very testy next week.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think we will get past Duke, but that's all right.
Mm-hmm.
It's great fun to be there. I called my college roommate this morning who lives in D.C., and I got his voicemail and sang the alma mater at 6:15 this morning.
Well, don't do that to us.
Oh, sir. I think Senator Hartung's heard me sing.
Yes. All right.
We get now into what I call the comes and goes part of the budget, which is where the money comes from and then where it goes in terms of how it's expended. And what Tom Andrus is going to begin at least doing today is taking us down into the sources of the funding, how then it is allocated by the institutions and by the campuses, and that will get us then down even further into the detail. The only interruption that I would point out to the committee this week, the only break in the presentation will be tomorrow and on Wednesday, and in those 2 days we have guests who are coming in some cases from quite some distance. So if you don't mind us being the flexible part of your program so that we don't inconvenience these folks who are making some considerable sacrifices to be here tomorrow and Wednesday. So we'll start today. We will have some of this tomorrow, but mostly our other folks presenting to you. And on Wednesday, you have the statewide public services. And then we'll be back in more detail on Thursday. So if that is acceptable.
Certainly.
And I promise not to do this but once a session.
But what are these out-of-state people going to be telling us?
Sir?
What the people that are coming from out-of-state, great distances.
Well, no, I'm within Oregon. These are folks within Oregon. But in some cases, we have CEOs who are coming at some distance, and they change their schedules,
sure.
And we're mindful of that. So rather than not have you not hear them,
sure.
We'll begin today, interrupt for 2 days, and then be back on Thursday with my colleague from Tucson.
Yeah.
Okay, Tom, proceed. Go Wildcats.
Go Wildcats, yes.
I must say...
Thank you, Senator.
One more piece. I know it's difficult being a duck or a beaver and explaining it. You should try being a terrapin.
Well, I can think of a lot of things terrapins are. Prehistoric. Tom, please proceed.
Thank you, Senator. Members of the committee, as Chancellor Cox has said, there's a number of things that we have lined up for today, and some of it actually, I think, has been at least touched upon, so we don't have to dwell on some of the kind of the macro comparisons and so forth on fund sources and expenditures. I will go through that. We'll talk about it. But I have to admit, I do want to get to the governor's budget as well, because I think there are some areas there that we can help give you some more background on questions that you've had. One in particular that I do want to make you aware of is that within the information that you've got today, there is a 3-page summary of all of the impacts of the reductions that were made in the governor's budget. So as you were looking through and wondering what the public service programs were or what all of those are, there are brief explanations of those impacts. There'll be very much more in terms of the presentations coming up over the next 3 or 4 days, so you'll get plenty of background on that. So first we'll take a look at where the funding comes from, a quick overview on expenditures, what drives cost, the governor's recommendations, and another area is student funding, and basically the tuition and fees. Probably won't get that to that today, but that's something we can hold off to a later point in time. What I'd like to do then is go to slide 4.
That's tab 4, or what?
Slide 4.
Okay,
again, you've seen some of this in perhaps a slightly different order. This is for this biennium, the funding in terms of where it comes from and where the dollars go. And just basically, what we're looking at is $2.9 billion for the system for this biennium, 30% of which, and I think this responds to Senator Tro's one question, 30% of which comes from federal funds. The next down in terms of a percentage is your state general fund, which is approximately 26%, and then there are a variety of other sources, including student tuition and fees, of nearly 16%. It's kind of interesting as we look at this, and I won't dwell on it, but when you begin to look at the $754 million, it's extremely important. Not even on the margin. It's very, very important. And that level is particularly important when you look at the history of the general fund over the last 4 or 5 biennia. That is obviously the high watermark. That is the most that we have had in state support. Interestingly enough, in 91 and 93, we had $731 million in state general fund support. That then dropped down to 667, further 501 in 95, 97, and then back up slightly to 583, 97, 99. So we're on a bit of a roller coaster with the general fund. What has occurred during that period of time has been, at least up through 97, were increases in student tuition and fees. So again, just kind of a basic on that, and where you can see where most of the dollars go, or at least 42-43% is for instruction and support services. This, again, is the total budget for 99-2001. Going to the slide 5, we then shift over to the governor's recommended budget for 2001 and 2003 and just highlight some differences. You're looking at a budget of $3.6 billion. That is an increase of $700 million. A little bit deceiving, and we'll talk about why that is, but the growth, as you can see, in general fund is only about 1% over the prior year, whereas the tuition and fee growth is actually, I think, around $150 million. So there's some changes in that budget that reflect a different kind of student state share. One point that I want to address, and to some degree it's part of the technical adjustments, but the federal funds have increased substantially. They went up, at least in total dollars, from $872 million to $1.1 billion. That increase is in part due to additional financial aid, but it's also kind of a revision, if you will, in adjusting where the prior year's base, we don't think accurately reflected the total federal dollars coming in. And that is always more uncertain as a fund source than others. So that's, again, looking in the kind of the broadest sense of our budget, $3.6 billion. And as you can see, the general fund actually declines in terms of its portion of the total, and tuition and fees actually declines a bit as well, while increasing substantially in the total number of dollars. What does that exactly mean? Probably, in looking at six, we get our best sense of what it is we're looking at, what it is you're looking at, probably more than anything else, and that's the education in general budget. And here you begin to see, I think it had been mentioned by Senator Trow, kind of that 50-50 sort of a split. And with the E&G budget, you can see that 50.75% of the total education and general budget, and again, that's focused on instruction and instructional support, 50% comes from the state. And then you've got the remaining funding, which is spaced between tuition and fees, largely about 32%, and then indirect cost, and then variety of other service sources, comprises the $1.2 billion that is the education in general fund. Now that, again, is 1999, 2001. That's where we're at today. The big difference from the discussion that we've had earlier is this excludes most of the federal grants and contracts that I think Mr. Bender mentioned as well. Going to slide 7, we're looking at
excuse me, Tom, just sure. A moment. To go back to page 4 of the first slide, general fund, $754 million, represents 26% of the source of funds for the operation. I thought we were down to 17% or so for state support. Where do I get that figure, Joe?
Senator, several of the institutions probably are only 18%. This is the overall, putting all 7 together.
Oh, okay.
And if you chose to, for example, U of O, you would see a significantly smaller percentage than your general.
Okay. Is there some way, without too much trouble, you can give us state general support for each one of the 7 institutions?
Sure. Yes. Person. Ms. Lanier reminds me that also includes any capital construction development dollars, which would vary significantly.
Okay. And then I look at the proposed budget, $762 million. That's only $8 million more than the figure from the previous. But, you know, I thought last session we put $100 million more in approximately, and now the governor's revised budget has restored about 45 of that. The figures don't match up. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Senator and members of the committee, this does not reflect the governor's additional $45 million or the $7.5 million for statewides. We were asked to keep it at the same levels as was the original governor's projections.
But the original governor's projection, I was told, was $100 million less than what we did last session.
The senator and members of the committee, $96 million, the governor reduced $96 million from the current services budget. So that what you'll see is here, as we go through this, you'll see that there is a $96 million reduction from current services. Then there is an add back of enhancements of $53.5 million. So the actual net is about 50-some million dollars from current services.
Okay. Representative Schrader.
Does that include the differential and the faculty salaries that we talked about the other day? Including that in your 96, is that correct?
Chair Hartung, Representative Schrader, the $96 million does include the $12.7 million. Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair, just for the record, the $96.1 million figure that's been used also includes some state government service charges that were reduced. So when an agency's state government service charge gets reduced, then we reduce their budget by that amount.
What kind of charges would those be? Attorney General?
In this case, I don't have the specifics here, but I will provide you with that. Okay, sure. Provide you with that. Mostly these are, I would say, the Department of Administrative Services related charges.
Okay. All right, proceed, Tom.
Okay, looking again at slide 7, what we see is an overall increase in 1 year, one biennium to the next, in terms of ENG of approximately 6%. And I want to emphasize that, again, it's a variety of fund sources, but I think originally what we've been looking at told originally was that the overall budget increased some 24.9%. I think what is important to remember there is that the vast majority of that change really came about during federal funds and other funds outside of the ENG budget. And I raise that because those are dollars that are, again, federal funds and sales and services auxiliaries are more restricted dollars. They cannot be easily put into instruction and into the ENG budget.
What kind of sales fee does higher ed get? That's a new term for me, sales and service fees, $54 million, that's...
Well, Senator, sales and services fees come in a variety of areas. One of those that you frequently think of, in generally in auxiliary services, is for residence halls. It's for, now, within residence halls, bookstores, dining are huge profit centers, if you will, where funding is, but for self-supporting purposes. Within the ENG budget, there is about 6 or 7 major increases, library books, interest income, facilities rental income, conferences, workshops. Those are areas that would fall under that sales and service fee.
Thank you.
Okay, moving to slide 8. Higher education's share of the general fund had declined up until 99-01, relatively steadily since 87-89. And as you can see, we mentioned the infusion of the $100 million. That moved us up back to near 7% in 99-01, our present biennium. If the governor's recommendation, as not revised, without the $45 million and the $7.5 million, we would be back to around 6.3% again, which is kind of important. Let's move into historical expenditures, if that's all right. Again, this will be relatively brief. This goes back to trying to look at expenditures from the standpoint not of each institution, and certainly we can do that at a point in time if that's something that the committee would like, but it's looking at it from a system-wide perspective and from those programs or functions that we talked about early on, where we were looking at instruction, research, public service, kind of the national categorization of programs. What, as you look at slide 10, and as we suggested last week when looking at the performance indicators, instruction has shown continuing growth in total dollars and a relatively, overall, a relatively stable share of the total expenditures. As we look at another graph, we'll see that kind of a percentage change has been relatively stable. When you look at this, something that's kind of important that struck me is that in 1995-96, and these are annual figures, these are not biennial, but 1995-96, the ENG support was $478.7 million. So in that very first chunk of programs and funding support, we're looking at $478.7 million. You get to 1999-00, the last year in the table, you're looking at $567.9 million. So over that six-year history, the total ENG expenditures by program increased, and again, this is on an annual basis, by about $100 million. And that will go back a little bit to the issue of kind of the cycles that we've been going through and the issues related to the model to some degree.
Sure. Senator Trill, do you show this adjusted for by inflation and student population and things like that?
Chairman Hartung, Senator Trill, in this particular instance, this is not adjusted, but we do have We do have that, yes.
We'd like to see that.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Looking at slide 11, again, this is a percentage very similar in terms of what we see visually. Looking at instruction, basically stuck at the 50%, which is typical of our institutions as a whole. If you looked at each individual institutions, this would vary, maybe as high as 60% in some cases, lower in the range of 40%, where you have an institution like an OSU where it has a far greater emphasis on research and the statewide publics and so forth. So you're looking at what is a relatively stable situation in terms of the percentages, and I want to emphasize the percentages. When we look at the next chart, all of this kind of looks, well, doesn't look bad. Expenditures per student have remained relatively constant with a limited increase in instruction, again, which matches our dollars. But I think, again, the point that I would make, and as we look at the model, we do remain, on a relative basis to ourselves, this is what's happening. On a relative basis to our, quote, peers that we'll talk a little bit about tomorrow, we continue to fall behind. We were funded with that $100 million infusion that you mentioned, Senator Hartung. We're looking at a level of about 87.9% in terms of the enrollment-driven model. With the reduction in the governor's budget, again, not making the assumption that the $45 million comes back, we fall down to approximately 20% below, or 80% of the peers, 80% of the median of the peers. So we're actually falling farther behind. These expenditures that I'm reflecting here on a kind of a relative scale to ourselves doesn't tell us that. So tomorrow when we get into the discussion on our peers and talk a little bit more about the model, I think that will expose us a little bit more to some other kind of benchmarks. What I'd like to do now, if possible, in the last 5 or 6 minutes, is invite Bob Kieran and Jay Kenton to come up. They will address some of the issues that have been raised on faculty compensation and factors that drive cost, if that's all right.
Certainly do that, but we do need to end in about seven
yes.
minutes. So, gentlemen, please come forward.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Chairman Hartung, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Kieran. I'm Director of Institutional Research Services for the Oregon University System. I'd like to take just a minute of your time to talk about the Oregon economy and its relationship to higher ed, what's been happening in the last little while, and then I'll let Jay tell you about the factors that drive our costs. Historically, Oregon's economy has been based on agriculture and lumber and wood products, and these are fields that have not traditionally required a college degree and perhaps not even a high school degree. The history of the lumber and wood product sectors has been well told over the years: the recession of the 80s, severe cutbacks in the auctioning of federal timber, high interest rates, and the closures of mills have led to high unemployment rates. Oregon suffered from being dependent on only a few small industries. Today, Oregon has its lowest unemployment rate in its history, its economy is strong, and the most significant change has been in the development of the Silicon Forest and an incredible surge in employment and high technology. There are more high school graduates than ever that wish to pursue a college degree. The slide that is up on the screen there was put together by the Office of Economic Analysis. It shows the 10-year growth in the gross state product. You see a 51% decline in lumber and wood products and declines in paper and allied products and printing, but the graph dramatically shows the increase in the high-tech products, up over 1,000%. Within the durable goods manufacturing sector, it now accounts for nearly 20% of the gross state product, more than 7 times the value of lumber and wood. In addition to the higher education required in computer science and engineering for the high-tech fields, farming is now agribusiness and soil science, forestry requires resource management professionals, and nearly any business that intends to be competitive hires business professionals to help manage in an international economy. Today, more Oregonians think they must have a college diploma to find a good job. We've seen the next slide on job growth before. I just wanted to let you see it again to point out that the future for Oregon is going to involve a lot of education degrees and quite a lot of growth in the computer science and engineering fields. I'd like to remind you, too, that as Dr. Clark pointed out, a lot of our undergraduate degrees in the social sciences and humanities and sciences are the majors of students who intend to go into education, and they are not necessarily terminal degrees. We still don't want to have an economy that's based on one or two industries. Our leading trading partners are in Asia, and they're not likely to trade because of our low labor costs. They're looking for innovation, creativity, new ideas and concepts, and marketable products. These are the result of a well-educated workforce. Our primary export right now is high technology. It exceeds agriculture, lumber and wood, transportation equipment combined. So if we want to stay healthy in an international economy, we're going to have to pay attention to our exports, and that is definitely high technology now. I'd like to add just a few words about Oregon's state rankings in key areas during the past 10 years, and these are numbers from the U.S. Census Bureau. I'm afraid you don't have a slide on them. In 1990, the state ranked 20th for persons with a bachelor's degree or better. In 1999, it was 14th. The average annual pay rankings went from 26th in 1990 to 21st in 1999. And our state gross product maintained its 28th ranking. There's one statistic that's a negative for us, and because it has an impact not just on Oregon residents, but on our ability to recruit high-quality faculty, I feel it's significant. In 1990, Oregon ranked 37th of the 50 states in home ownership rates. In 1999, we ranked 43rd. So today, housing is less affordable in only 6 states. That's a significant factor when we recruit faculty. In response to questions that we've had in the past, I have 3 slides on faculty compensation and the impact of the pay raises that we've given between 98.9 and 99.00. We'll have more detail on the model tomorrow, but I wanted you to be able to take a look at these numbers today. With Oregon State, Portland State, and University of Oregon, we have a set of peers for them against which we measure their faculty salaries. We've set a goal of trying to reach the midpoint of our peers. So when the top line on the slide that says weighted average, the 76,000 is the midpoint of our peers' salary. In order to be able to have comparable data, we've weighted this the salary rankings with a 35% number of professors, 30% associate professors, and 30% assistant professors, and 5% instructors. That allows us to compare evenly across. You can see then for 98.9 that those 3 institutions were in the high 80s in relation to the midpoint of their peers. With the pay raises that were given in the next biennium, in the next year, the weighted average went up to 80,100. The OUS institutions improved somewhat, and the very right column there shows Oregon State has improved about 3.7% against their peers, but they're still only 92.2% of the midpoint of the salaries. And you can see down as well that Portland State, even though they gave increases, didn't gain against the peers, and the University of Oregon gained about 4.3%. The next slide is a similar slide just for the regionals. They show a similar story. I think we were asked about Western directly. They only gained about 2% against their peers, and what this means is that their peers are giving pay raises as well. The final one will show the equivalent information for their OIT. They were actually over their peers. Since they're all engineering-related technology, they really have to meet market conditions in order to hire faculty. They actually lost 3% against their peers.
Okay, thank you, Bob. Jay, how much time do you need? We're out of time, basically. Is it convenient for you to come back? Or?
Yes, it is. I'd be happy to come back soon.
Okay, I'd like that because I'd like to give you a little more time. Is there any other business to come before this committee? If not, we are. Thank you.